trickier than my hair. It had one of those stupid zippers that refused to move higher than my lower back, and no matter how I contorted myself, I couldn't win. After struggling with it so long, my fingers hurt. I had to get help. Tentatively, I pushed open the bathroom door. Finn had been looking out the window at the sun setting over the bluffs. When he turned, his eyes rested on me for a full minute before he finally spoke.
"You look like a princess," he said with a crooked smile.
"I need help with the zipper," I said meekly, gesturing to the open slit down my back. He walked over, and it was almost a relief to have my back to him. The way he looked at me made my stomach swirl with nervous butterflies. One of his hands pressed warmly on my bare shoulder to steady the fabric as he zipped me up, and I shivered involuntarily. When he had finished, I went over to the mirror to investigate for myself. Even I had to admit that I looked lovely. With the white dress and the diamond necklace, I almost looked too lavish. Maybe it was too much for just a dinner. "I look like I'm getting married," I commented and glanced back at Finn. "Do you think I should change?"
"No, it's perfect."
He looked pensively at me, and if I didn't know better, I'd say he looked almost sad. The doorbell chimed loudly, and Finn nodded.
"The guests have arrived. We should greet them."
Chapter 12. Introductions. We walked down the hall together, but at the top of the stairs, Finn deliberately fell a few steps behind me. Alora and three people I guessed were the Kroners were standing in the alcove as I descended the stairs, and they all turned to look up at me. It was the first grand entrance I had ever made in my life, and there was something wonderful about it. The Kroners consisted of a stunningly beautiful woman in a floor-length dark green dress, an attractive man in a dark suit, and an attractive boy about my age. Even Alora looked more extravagant than usual. Her dress had more detailing, and her jewelry was more pronounced. I could feel them appraising me as I walked toward them, so I was careful to keep my steps as smooth and elegant as possible.
"This is my daughter, the princess."
Alora smiled in a way that almost looked loving and held out her hand to me.
"Princess, these are the Kroners, Aurora, Noah, and Tuve."
I smiled politely and did a small curtsy. Immediately after, I realized that they were probably the ones who should be curtsying to me, but they all continued to smile pleasantly at me.
"It's such a pleasure to meet you."
Aurora's words had a syrupy tone that made me wonder whether or not I should trust her. A few dark curls fell artfully from her elegant updo, and her chestnut eyes were large and stunning. Her husband, Noah, gave me a small bow, as did her son, Tuve. Both Noah and Aurora looked appropriately respectful, while Tuve looked vaguely bored. His mossy green eyes met mine very briefly, then darted away, as if eye contact made him uncomfortable. Alora ushered us into the sitting parlor to talk until supper. The conversation was overly polite and banal, but I suspected there were undercurrents that I didn't fully understand. Alora and Aurora did most of the talking, with Noah adding very little. Tuve said nothing at all, preferring to look anywhere but directly at anyone. Finn was more in the background, speaking only when spoken to. He was poised and polite, but from the disdainful way Aurora looked at him, I gathered she didn't approve of his presence. The Stromes were fashionably late, as Finn had predicted they would be. He'd briefed me extensively on both them and the Kroners earlier in the day, but he was much more familiar with the Stromes and talked of them in much more affectionate tones. Finn had been a tracker for Willa, so he knew her and her father, Garrett, quite well. Garrett's wife, Willa's mother, had died some years earlier. Finn claimed that Garrett was easygoing, but that Willa was a tad high-strung. She was 21, and prior to living in Foreatening, she'd been privileged to the point of excess. When the doorbell rang, interrupting the irritatingly dull conversation between Aurora and my mother, Finn immediately excused himself to answer the door and returned with Garrett and Willa in tow. Garrett was a rather handsome man in his mid-40s. His hair was dark and disheveled, making me feel better about my own imperfect hair. When he shook my hand with a warm smile, he immediately put me at ease. Willa, on the other hand, had that snobby look as if she were simultaneously bored and pissed off. She was a waif of a girl with light brown waves that fell neatly down her back, and she wore an anklet covered in diamonds. When she shook my hand, I could tell that her smile was at least sincere, making me hate her a little less. Now that they had arrived, we adjourned to the dining room for supper. Willa attempted to engage Tuve in conversation as we walked into the other room, but he remained completely silent. Finn pulled my chair out for me before I sat down, and I enjoyed it since I couldn't remember a single time that anyone had ever done that for me. He waited until everyone was sitting before taking a seat himself, and this deference would be the standard for the evening. As long as at least one person was standing, so would Finn. He was always the first to his feet, and even though the chef and a butler were on staff tonight, Finn would offer to get anyone anything they needed. The dinner dragged on much more slowly than I had imagined it could. Since I wore white, I barely ate out of fear of spilling anything on my dress. I had never felt so judged in my entire life. I could feel Aurora and Allura waiting for me to screw up so they could pounce. But I wasn't sure how either of them would benefit from my failure. I could tell that on several occasions Garrett tried to lighten the mood, but his attempts were rebuffed by Aurora and Allura, who dominated the conversation. The rest of us rarely spoke. Tuve stirred his soup a lot, and I became mildly hypnotized by that. He'd let go of his spoon, but it kept swirling around the bowl, stirring the soup without any hand to guide it. I must have started to gape because I felt Finn gently kick me under the table, and I quickly dropped my eyes back to my own food.
"It's so nice to have you here," Garrett told me at one point, changing the entire topic of conversation. "How do you like the palace so far?"
"Oh, it is not a palace, Garrett," said Allura with a laugh. It wasn't a real laugh, though. It was the kind of laugh rich people use whenever they talk about new money people. Aurora tittered right along with it, and that quieted Allura down somehow.
"You're right. It's better than a palace," Garrett said, and Allura smiled demurely.
"I like it. It's very nice." I knew I was making bland conversation, but I was afraid to elaborate more.
"Are you adjusting here all right?" Garrett asked.
"Yes, I think so," I said. "I haven't been here that long, though."
"It does take time."
Garrett looked at Willa with affectionate concern. His easy smile returned quickly, and he nodded at Finn.
"But you've got Finn there to help you. He's an expert at helping the changelings acclimate." "I'm not an expert at anything," Finn said quietly. "I just do my job the best I can."
"Have you had a designer come over to make the dress yet?"
Aurora asked Allura, taking a polite sip of wine. It had been a minute since she'd last spoken, so it was time for her to assert herself once more in the conversation.
"That dress the princess has on is very lovely, but I can't imagine that it was made specifically for her."
"No, it was not." Allura gave her a plastic smile and cast a very small but very distinct glare at my dress. Until just that second, it had felt like the most beautiful thing I had ever worn.
"The tailor is set to come over early next week." "That is cutting it a bit short for next Saturday, isn't it?"
Aurora questioned, and I could see Allura bristling just below the surface of her perfect smile.
"That's just over a week away."
"Not at all," Allura said in an overly soothing tone, almost as if she were talking to a small child or a Pomeranian. "I am using Frederik von Elsen, the same one who designed Willa's gown. He works very quickly, and his gowns are always impeccable." My gown was divine, Willa interjected.
Oh, yes,
Aurora allowed herself to look impressed.
We have him on reserve for when our daughter comes home next spring. He's much harder to get then, since that is the busy season for when the children return.
There was something vaguely condescending in her voice, as if we had done something tacky by having me arrive here when I did. Alora kept on smiling, despite what I now realized was a steady stream of polite barbs from Aurora.
That is one major benefit of having the princess come home in the fall,
Aurora continued, her words only getting more patronizing as she spoke.
Everything will be so much easier to book. When Tuve came home last season, it was so difficult to get everything just right. I suppose you'll have everything you want on hand. That should make for a stunning ball.
Several things were setting off alarms in my head. First, they were talking about both me and Tuve as if we weren't even there, although he didn't seem to notice or care about anything going on around him. Second, they were talking about something going on next Saturday that I apparently needed a specially designed dress for, and yet nobody had bothered to mention it to me. Then again, this shouldn't surprise me. Nobody told me anything.
I haven't had the luxury of making plans a year in advance the way most people do, since the princess came home most unexpectedly.
Alora's sweet smile dripped with venom, and Aurora smiled back at her as if she didn't notice.
I can certainly lend you a hand. I just did Tuve's, and as I said, I'm already preparing for our daughters,
Aurora offered.
That would be delightful.
Alora took a long drink of her wine. Dinner continued that way. Alora and Aurora's conversation barely masking how much they detested each other. Noah didn't say much, but at least he managed not to look awkward or bored. Willa and I ended up watching Tuve quite a bit, but for entirely different reasons. She stared at him with unabashed lust, although I couldn't figure out what he'd done to deserve that, other than being attractive. I kept watching because I was certain he was moving things without touching them. The Kroners didn't linger after dinner, but the Stroms did. I assume that was because Alora actually liked Garrett and Willa. Alora, Finn, and I walked the Kroners out, with Finn coming along only to open the doors for them. When saying their goodbyes, Aurora and Noah bowed before us, making me feel quite ridiculous. There was absolutely no reason why anyone should bow to me. To my astonishment, Tuve gently took my hand in his, kissing it softly when he bowed. When he straightened up, his eyes met mine, and very seriously, he said,
I look forward to seeing you again, princess.
And I you.
I was so pleased that I had said something that sounded completely perfect for the moment. And then I smiled much too wide, I'm sure. Once they departed into the night, oxygen seemed to return to the house, and Alora let out an irritated sigh. Finn rested his forehead against the door for a moment before turning back around to face us. I felt much better knowing that everyone else had found the evening exhausting, too.
Oh, that woman!
Alora rubbed her temples and shook her head, then pointed at me.
You! You do not bow to anyone, ever! Especially not that woman!
I know you thrilled her endlessly, and she's going to be telling everyone about the little dim-witted princess who didn't know enough not to bow before a Marxina.
I looked at the floor, feeling any sense of pride vanish.
You don't even bow before me. Is that clear?
Yes, I said.
You are the princess. Nobody is higher than you. Have you got that?
Alora snapped, and I nodded.
Then you need to start acting like it. You need to command the room.
They need to have confidence that you will be able to lead them all when I'm gone.
I kept my eyes locked on the floor, even though I knew that probably offended her. But I was afraid I would cry if I looked at her yelling at me.
You sit there like some beautiful, useless jewel, and that's exactly what she wants.
She sighed disgustedly again.
Oh, and the way you gaped at that boy.
At that, she abruptly stopped. She shook her head as if too weary to continue, then turned and walked back to the sitting parlor. I swallowed back my feelings, and Finn gently touched my arm, smiling at me.
You did just fine, he assured me quietly. She's upset with Aurora Kroner, not you.
It sure sounded like she was upset with me, I muttered under my breath.
Don't let her get to you.
He squeezed my arm, sending warm tingles through me, and I couldn't help but return his smile.
Come on, we need to get back to the guests.
In the sitting parlor, Garrett and Willa waited for us, the entire atmosphere far more relaxed than it had been at dinner. Finn even loosened his tie. Her outburst seemed to have calmed Alora completely, and she lounged on the chair next to Garrett. He seemed to capture a disproportionate amount of her attention, but I didn't mind. Soon, a whole other side of Finn emerged. He sat next to me, his leg crossed over his knee, making charming small talk with the group. He was still gracious and respectful, but he chatted easily. I bit my tongue, afraid to say the wrong thing, happy to let Finn entertain Garrett and Willa. Even Alora looked pleased. Garrett and Alora started talking politics, and Finn became more engaged in the conversation. Apparently, Alora had to appoint a new chancellor in 6 months. I didn't even know what that was, and I thought asking would only make me look foolish. As the night progressed, Alora had to excuse herself because of a migraine. Garrett and Finn offered their sympathy, but neither of them seemed particularly surprised or concerned. When they continued with the whole chancellor business again, it became clear that Willa had grown bored. She said she needed fresh air and invited me to join her. We went down a long hall to a small alcove with nearly invisible glass doors. They led out to the balcony that ran from one end of the house to the other, lined with a thick black railing that reached up to my chest. I froze, remembering the painting I had seen in Alora's locked room. It was this marble balcony I had been lying on, my hand outstretched at nothing, my face contorted in horror. I looked down at my dress, but it didn't feel right. This one was lovely, but the dress in the picture had shimmered. Broken glass had littered the ground also, and I didn't see any.
Are you coming? Willa glanced back at me.
Yeah, I nodded. And taking a deep breath, I followed her out. Willa went over to the farthest corner and leaned on the railing. Out here, the view was even more intimidating. The balcony hung over 100-foot drop. Below us, the tops of maples, oaks, and evergreens stretched out as far as the eye could see. The secret garden remained hidden from sight. Farther down the bluff, I could see the tops of houses, and way down at the bottom, the turbulent river ran past us. Just then, a breeze blew across the balcony, sending a cold chill down my bare arms, and Willa sighed.
Oh, knock it off,
Willa grumbled. And at first, I thought she was talking to me. I was about to ask what she meant when she lifted her hand and waved her fingers lightly in the air. Almost instantly, her hair, which had been blowing back in the breeze, settled on her shoulders. The wind had died away.
Did you do that?
I asked, trying not to sound as awed as I felt.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can do. Lame, isn't it?
Willa wrinkled her nose.
No, actually, I think it's pretty cool, I admitted.
She controlled the wind. Wind was an unstoppable force, and she just wiggled her fingers and magically it stopped.
I kept hoping I'd get a real ability someday, but my mother only had command over the clouds, so at least I did better than that.
Willa shrugged.
You'll see when your abilities start coming in. Everybody hopes for telekinesis or at least some persuasion. But most of us are stuck with basic use of the elements, if we're lucky. The abilities aren't what they used to be, I guess.
Before you came here, did you know you were something? I asked, looking over my shoulder at her.
She had her back against the railing, and she leaned over it, letting her hair hang down over the edge. Oh, yeah. I always knew I was better than everyone else. Her eyes fluttered shut, and she waved her fingers again, stirring up a light breeze to flow through her hair.
What about you?
Kind of. Different, yes. Better? Not at all.
You're younger than most of us, though, Willa commented.
You're still in school, aren't you?
I was.
Nobody had made any mention of school since I got here, and I had no idea what their intentions were for the remainder of my education.
School sucks anyway.
Willa stood up straight and looked at me solemnly.
So, why did they get you early anyway?
Is it because of the vitre?
What do you mean?
I asked nervously. I knew what she meant, but I wanted to see if she'd tell me. Nobody seemed that keen on talking about the vitre, and Finn hadn't even mentioned their attack since I'd come here. Inside the compound, I assumed I was safe, but I didn't know if they still wanted me.
I've heard stories that the vitre have been prowling around lately, trying to catch trail changelings, Willa said casually.
I figured you'd be a top priority because you're the princess, and that's kind of a big deal here.
She looked thoughtfully at her bare toes and mused. I wonder if I'd be a top priority. My dad's not a king or anything like that, but we are kind of royalty. What's lower than a queen in the human world? Is that a duchess or something?
I don't know, I shrugged. I knew nothing of monarchy and titles, which was ironic, considering that I was now integral to a monarchy.
Yeah, I think I'm like that.
Willa narrowed her eyes in concentration.
My official title is Marxina, and that's like a duchess. My dad is a marquis, which is just a male Marxina.
We're not the only ones, though. There are maybe 6 or 7 other families in Fort-Eatning alone with the same title. The Croners were next in line for the crown if you didn't come back. They're real powerful. And that Tuve is a catch. While he was attractive, nothing had impressed me about Tuve other than his telekinesis. Still, it felt weird knowing that they were vying for my spot, and we had just eaten dinner with them.
I don't have to worry that much about it, though, Willa yawned loudly. Sorry, boredom makes me sleepy. Maybe we should go inside.
It was getting cold, so I was happy to oblige. As soon as we went back in, Willa lay on the couch and all but fell asleep, so Garrett excused himself shortly after. He went to say goodbye to Allura and then helped Willa out to the car. The butler was cleaning everything up, so Finn suggested that we head up to our respective rooms. The night had been surprisingly tiring, so I was eager to comply.
What's going on? I asked after the Stromes left.
It was the first chance I'd had all evening to really talk to him.
What is this ball or party or whatever that's happening next Saturday?
It's the trail equivalent of a debutante ball, except that boys go through it too,
Finn explained as we climbed the stairs. Dully, I remembered how grand I had felt coming down the stairs a few hours earlier. For the first time, I had felt almost like a princess. And now, I felt like a child playing dress-up. Aurora had seen through my fancy trappings, which she didn't even find all that fancy, and realized that I wasn't special.
I don't even know what a debutante ball is, I sighed. I knew nothing of high society.
It's a coming-out party. Your presentation to the world, Finn elaborated. Changelings aren't raised here. The community doesn't know them. So when they come back, they're given a small amount of time to acclimate, and then they're introduced to society. Every changeling has one, but most are very small.
Since you are the princess, you will have guests from all over the Trill community. It is quite an ordeal.
I groaned. I'm not ready for that at all.
You will be, Finn assured me.
We walked in silence the rest of the way to my bedroom as I fretted and worried about the upcoming party. It hadn't been that long ago that I had gone to my very first dance, and now I was expected to be the center of a formal ball. I could never pull that off. Tonight had only been a semi-formal dinner, and I hadn't even performed well at that.
I trust you'll sleep well this evening,
Finn said as I opened the bedroom door. You need to come in with me, I reminded him, then pointed to my dress. I can't unzip this thing on my own.
Of course.
Finn followed me into the darkened room and flipped on the lights. The glass wall worked as a mirror thanks to the black night. In the reflection, I still thought I looked nice, and then I realized that was probably because I had other people picking out my clothes. My judgment was too flawed. I turned away from the glass and waited for Finn to unzip me. I really botched things tonight, didn't I? I asked sadly.
No, of course not.
Finn's hand pressed warm on my back, and I felt the dress loosen as he pulled the zipper down. I wrapped my arms around myself to keep it up, then turned to look at him. Some part of me was distinctly aware that we were only a few inches apart. My dress was barely on, and his dark eyes were fixed on me.
You did exactly what I told you, Finn said. If anyone ruined things, it was me. But the night wasn't ruined. Allura is just sensitive about the Kroners.
Why? Why does she let them get to her so much? She's the queen.
Monarchs have been overthrown before, Finn answered calmly. If you seem unfit for the position, the next in line can contest it and petition to take the title.
All the color drained from my face. There was suddenly way too much pressure on me to perform. I felt sick, and I swallowed hard. The ball had scared me enough before I knew that, if I failed, my mother could be overthrown.
Don't worry. You'll be fine.
His expression saddened again, and he added quietly,
Allura has a plan to appease them.
What is it? I asked. Instead of answering, his eyes got far away and his expression blanked. His brow furrowed, and then he nodded.
I am sorry, Finn said. You're going to have to excuse me. Allura requires assistance in her room.
Allura called you to her room? I stumbled over the question, unable to hide my shock. Somehow, it seemed vaguely inappropriate that Finn would be making a late-night visit to her room. Maybe it was because she had just asked him inside his head, and I couldn't get a read on the exact nature of their relationship. The fact that I was feeling jealous of my own mother was more than a little creepy, and that added a nauseous feeling on top of everything else.
Yes, her migraine is quite severe.
Finn took a step away from me. All right, well, have fun with that, I muttered. The door closed softly behind him, and I went into the bathroom to take off my jewelry and change into baggy pajamas. Sleep was difficult for me that night. I was too anxious about all the things I was expected to accomplish. I knew nothing about this world or these people, and yet I was supposed to rule over them someday. That wouldn't have been so bad, except that I was supposed to master everything in less than a week so they would believe that I could rule. If I didn't, everything my mother had worked so hard for would be taken away. Even though I wasn't that fond of Allura, I was even less fond of Aurora. And I didn't like the idea of ruining my family's entire legacy. Chapter 13. Being Trill. Lazy Sundays happened even in Foreatening. Thankfully. I woke up late and was happy to learn the chef was still on hand to make breakfast. I saw Finn briefly, passing him in the hall, but it was no more than a nod hello.
I flopped back onto my bed, thinking I would spend the day bored out of my mind. Then Reese knocked on my door, interrupting my plans for moping, and invited me over to his room to watch movies with him and Rhiannon. His room was a masculine version of mine, which made sense since he had decorated my room. A huge, overstuffed couch sat in front of his TV, the one big difference between our rooms. We ended up watching the Lord of the Rings trilogy because Reese insisted it was much funnier once I'd spent time with actual trolls. Reese sat between us on the couch. When the first movie started, he was directly in the middle. But somewhere around 3 or 4 hours into the marathon, I noticed he'd moved closer to me. Not that I minded. He talked and joked a lot with Rhiannon, and they had a way of making me feel comfortable. After spending the weekend failing to be the perfect little princess Alora wanted me to be, it felt good to just relax and laugh. Rhiannon left right after the third movie started, saying she had to get up early in the morning. Even after she'd gone, Reese didn't move away from me. He sat so close to me on the couch that his leg pressed against mine. I thought about moving away, but I didn't really have any reason to. The movie was fun. He was foxy, and I enjoyed being with him. It wasn't too long before his arm casually went around my shoulders, and I almost laughed. He didn't make my heart race, not the way Finn did, but his arm felt nice. Reese made me feel normal in a way that I never had before, and I couldn't help but like him for it. Eventually, I leaned into him and rested my head on his shoulder. What I didn't realize was that watching all three extended edition versions of Lord of the Rings in one sitting ends up being over 11 hours of movie viewing. At 1 in the afternoon on a boring Sunday, that sounded genius. But by the time midnight rolled around, it became a war on sleep, and I eventually lost. In the morning, while I slept soundly on the couch in Reese's room, I had no idea that a commotion was going on in the house. I would have been happy to sleep through it too, but Finn threw open the door in a panic, jolting me awake. "Oh my gosh!" I shouted, jumping up off the couch. Finn had scared the hell out of me, and my heart pounded in my chest. "What's going on? Is everything okay?" Instead of answering, Finn just stood there, glaring at me. Behind me, Reese was waking up much more slowly. Apparently, Finn hadn't terrified him the way he had me. I glanced back at Reese, who was dressed in a t-shirt and sweats that somehow managed to look good on him, and it dawned on me how this must have looked to Finn when he first burst in. I still wore my lazy day comfy clothes, but Reese and I had been curled up together. And even if Finn hadn't noticed that detail, there was no denying that I'd spent the night in here. My mind scrambled to think of an excuse, but at that moment, even the innocent truth escaped me.
"She's in here," Finn called out flatly.
Reese groaned, so I knew things weren't good. He looked completely alert now, and he stood sheepishly next to me. I wanted to ask what was going on and why Finn looked so pissed off, but Alora didn't give me a chance. She appeared in the doorway, her emerald robe flaring out behind her in a dramatic billow, and her hair hung down her back in a thick braid. She stood behind Finn, but she somehow managed to eclipse everything else. Several times before, I had thought she looked unhappy, but that was nothing compared to the severe expression she had on now. She scowled so deep it looked painful, and her eyes were filled with fury.
"What do you think you're doing?"
Alora's voice echoed painfully inside my head, and she had added some of her psychic voice to make it more intense.
"Sorry," I said. "We were just watching movies and fell asleep."
"It was my fault," Reese added. I don't care what you were doing.
"Do you have any idea how inappropriate this behavior is?"
Her eyes narrowed on Reese, and he shrank back even more.
"Reese, you know this was completely unacceptable."
She rubbed her temples as if this were giving her another headache, and Finn looked at her with concern.
"I don't even want to deal with you."
Get ready for school and stay out of my sight.
Yes, ma'am, Reese nodded.
Sorry.
As for you,
Alora pointed a finger at me but couldn't find the words to finish. She just looked so disappointed and disgusted with me.
I don't care how you were raised before you came here.
You still know what kind of behavior is ladylike and what isn't.
I wasn't,
I began, but she held up her hand to silence me.
But to be honest, Finn, you disappoint me the most.
She had stopped yelling, and when she looked at Finn, she just sounded tired. He lowered his eyes in shame, and she shook her head.
I can't believe you allowed this to happen.
You know you need to keep your eyes on her at all times.
I know. I won't let it happen again.
Finn bowed apologetically to her.
You most certainly won't. Now fix this mess by educating her in the ways of the Trill.
In the meantime, I do not want to see any of you for the rest of the day.
She held her hands up, like she was done with the lot of us, and then shook her head and left the room.
I am so sorry, Reese apologized emphatically.
His cheeks were red with shame, and somehow that only made him cuter. Not that I was really paying attention to how he looked just then. My stomach was twisted in knots, and I was thankful that I hadn't started to cry. I didn't even fully understand what I'd done. I knew sleeping in a boy's room wasn't ideal, but they were acting like it was a capital offense.
You need to get ready for school,
Finn snapped, glaring at Reese. Then he pointed to the hall and turned to me.
You, out, now.
I gave him a wide berth on my way out the door. Normally, I loved being close to him, but not today. My heart pounded erratically, but not for any pleasurable reason. Finn tried to keep his face expressionless, but tension and anger radiated from his body. I slunk across the hall to my room, and Finn barked something at Reese about behaving himself.
Where are you going?
Finn demanded when I opened my bedroom door. He had just emerged from Reese's room and slammed the door behind him, making me jump.
To my room?
I pointed at my room and looked confused.
No, you need to come to my room with me,
Finn said.
What? Why?
I asked. A very small part of me felt excited about the prospect of going to his room with him. That sounded like the start of a fantasy I might have. But the way he was looking at me now, I was afraid he might kill me once we were in private.
I need to get ready for the day, and I can't very well let you out of my sight.
He wore pajama pants and a t-shirt, and his dark hair wasn't as sleek as it normally was. I nodded and hurried after him. He walked fast and pissed off, and I fell about a step or two behind.
I really am sorry, you know, I said. I didn't mean to fall asleep there. We were just watching movies and it got late. If I had known it would be like this, I would have made sure I was in my room.
You should have known, Wendy,
Finn exclaimed, exasperated.
You should know that your actions have consequences and the things you do matter.
I am sorry, I repeated. Yesterday was so boring and I just wanted to do something.
Finn whirled on me suddenly, startling me, so I took a step backward. My back hit the wall, but he stepped closer to me. He rested an arm against the wall on the side of me, his face only a few inches from mine. His dark eyes were blazing, but somehow his voice remained calm and even.
You know how it looks when a girl spends the night alone with a boy. I know you understand that. But it is so much worse when a princess spends the night alone with a mainskleeg. It could put everything in jeopardy.
I don't know what that means, I fumbled. None of you will tell me.
Finn continued to glare at me for another painful minute, then sighed and took a step back. As he stood there, rubbing his eyes, I swallowed back tears and caught my breath. When he looked back at me, his eyes had softened a bit, but he didn't say anything. He just walked to his room and uncertainly, I followed him. His room was smaller than mine, but a much more comfortable size. Even though the blinds were shut, I could tell one of his walls was made entirely of glass. Dark blankets covered his bed, and books overflowed from several bookshelves. In one corner, he had a small desk with a laptop on it. Like me, he had an adjoining bathroom. When he went in it, he left the door open, and I heard the sound of him brushing his teeth. Tentatively, I sat on the edge of his bed and looked around. "You must stay here a lot," I commented. I knew that he stayed here on and off, but to have a room full of stuff implied a more permanent living situation.
"I live here when I'm not tracking," Finn said.
"My mother is quite fond of you," I said dimly.
"Not right now, she's not."
Finn turned off the water and came out, leaning on the doorframe to his bathroom. Sighing, he lowered his eyes.
"I'm sorry for yelling at you."
"It's okay," I shrugged. I still didn't understand why he'd been that mad, but he had a point. I was a princess now, and I had to start behaving like one.
"No, you didn't deserve it."
He scratched his temple and shook his head.
"My anger was misdirected. When you weren't in your room this morning, I panicked. With everything going on with the Vitre..."
He shook his head again. "What's going on with the Vitre?" I asked, my heart speeding up.
"It's nothing to concern yourself with," Finn said. "My point is that my emotions were high when I couldn't find you, and I snapped at you. I apologize."
"No, it's my fault. You guys were right," I said. Finn just stood there looking away from me. And then I realized something. "How did you even know I wasn't in my room?"
"I checked on you."
Finn gave me a look like I was an idiot.
"I check on you every morning."
"You check on me when I'm sleeping?" I gaped at him.
"Every morning?"
He nodded. "I didn't know that."
"Why would you know that? You're sleeping,"
Finn pointed out. "Well, it just feels weird." I shook my head. Matt and Maggie used to check on me, but it felt strange knowing that Finn would come in and watch me sleep, even if it was only for a second.
"I have to make sure you're safe and sound. It's part of my job."
"You sound like a broken record sometimes," I muttered wearily. "You're always just doing your job."
"What else do you want me to say?"
Finn countered, looking at me evenly. I just shook my head and looked away. My pants suddenly became very fascinating, and I picked lint off them. Finn kept looking at me, and I expected him to finish getting ready. When he didn't, I decided that I had to fill the silence. "What is a mainskleek?" I looked at Finn again, and he exhaled.
"The literal translation for mainskleek is human."
He tilted his head, resting it against the doorframe, and watched me.
"Rhys is human."
I shook my head. "I don't understand. Why is he around?"
"Because of you,"
Finn said, and that only confused me more.
"You're a changeling, Wendy. You were switched at birth, meaning that when you took the place of another baby, that baby had to go somewhere else."
"You mean..." I trailed off, but it was incredibly obvious once Finn said it. "Rhys is Michael." Suddenly, my crush on him felt very weird. He wasn't my blood brother, but he was my brother's brother, even though Matt wasn't really my brother either. It still felt not right somehow. And really, I should have noticed sooner. I couldn't believe I didn't. Rhys and Matt look so much alike. Their sandy hair, blue eyes, even the way their faces were shaped. But Matt's worry had hardened him, while Rhys was quick to smile and laugh. Maybe that's why I hadn't noticed it. The complete contrast between their personalities had thrown me off.
"Michael?"
Finn looked perplexed.
Yeah, that's what my mother, Kim, my fake mom, named him. She knew she had a son, and that's Reese.
My mind swirled.
But how did they do it? How did they switch us?
It's relatively simple, Finn explained, almost tiredly. After Reese was born, Alora induced labor with you and, using persuasion on the family and hospital staff, she switched you out for him.
It can't be that simple. The persuasion didn't really work on Kim, I pointed out.
We normally do same-sex exchanges. A girl for a girl, a boy for a boy. But Alora had her mind set on the Everlys. It doesn't work as well when you do a boy-to-girl switch like that. Mothers are more likely to pick up on something being wrong, as was the case with your host mother.
Wait. I held up my hands and looked at him. She knew it was more dangerous, that Kim would be more likely to snap, but she did it anyway?
Alora believed that the Everlys would be the best for you, Finn maintained. And she wasn't completely wrong. Even you freely admit that the aunt and the brother were good to you.
I had always kind of hated Kim. I thought she had been terrible and cruel like so many of my classmates, but she had known that I wasn't her child. Kim had actually been an insanely good mother. She had remembered her son, even when she shouldn't have been able to, and she refused to give up on him. The whole thing was tragic when I thought about it. So that's why they don't want me with the main Skleeg. 'Cause he's like a stepbrother? I wrinkled my nose at the thought.
He's not your brother, Finn emphasized. Trill and main Skleeg have absolutely no relation. The problem is that they're human.
Are we, like, physically incompatible? I asked carefully.
No. Many Trill have left the compound to live with humans and have normal offspring, Finn said. That's part of the reason our populations are going down.
What happens to Reese now that I'm back? I asked, ignoring the clinical way Finn addressed everything. He was nothing if not professional.
Nothing. He can live here for as long as he wants. Leave if he decides to. Whatever he chooses.
Finn shrugged.
Main Skleeg aren't treated badly here. For example, Rhiannon is Willa's main Skleeg.
That makes sense, I nodded. Rhiannon seems so skittish and nervous, but also rather normal, unlike everyone else. So, what do they do with main Skleeg?
They aren't exactly raised as real children, but they are given everything to keep them happy and content, Finn said. We have schools set up for the main Skleeg, and while they aren't as nice as the schools you've gone to, the Manx do get an education. They even have a small trust fund set up for them. When they're 18, they're free to do as they please.
But they're not equals, I realized.
Alora tended to talk down to everyone, but she was worse with Reese and Rhiannon. I couldn't imagine that Willa was much nicer either. This is a monarchy. There are no equals.
For an instant, Finn looked almost sad. Then he walked over and sat on the bed next to me.
As your tracker, I am expected to educate you. And as Alora pointed out, I should have started sooner. You need to understand the distinct hierarchy here. There is royalty, of which you are at the top.
Finn gestured to me.
After Alora, of course. Below you, there are the Marquis and Marxina, but they can become kings and queens through marriage. Then there are your average Trill, the common folk, if you will. Below that, there are trackers. And at the very bottom, there are main Skleeg.
Why are trackers so low?
We are Trill, but we only track. My parents were trackers, and their parents before them, and so on.
Finn explained.
We have no changeling population, ever. That means that we have no income. We bring nothing into the community. We provide a service for other Trill,
and in return we are provided with a home and food.
You're like an indentured servant? I gasped.
Not exactly.
Finn tried to smile, but it looked forced.
Until we retire from tracking, we don't need to do anything else. Many trackers, such as myself, will work as a guard for some of the families in town. All of the service jobs, like the nannies, the teachers, the chefs, the maids, are almost entirely retired trackers, and they make an hourly wage. Some are also mainskleeg, but they stick around less and less.
That's why you always bow to Alora, I said thoughtfully.
She is the queen, Wendy. Everyone bows to her.
Finn corrected me.
Except for you and Rhys. He's rather impossible, and host parents don't usually force their Manx to bow to them.
It's nice to know that being the princess has some perks, like not bowing, I said, smirking.
Alora may seem cold and aloof, but she is a very powerful woman.
Finn looked at me solemnly.
You will be a very powerful woman. You will be given every opportunity the world has to offer you. I know you can't see it now, but you will have a very charmed life.
You're right. I can't see it, I admitted. It probably didn't help that I just got in trouble this morning, and I don't feel very powerful.
You're still very young, Finn said with a trace of a smile.
I guess. I remembered how angry he had been earlier, and I turned to him. I didn't do anything with Rhys. You know that, right? Nothing happened. Finn stared thoughtfully at the floor. I studied him, trying to catch a glimpse of something, but his face was a mask. Eventually, he nodded.
Yes, I know that.
You didn't this morning, though, did you? I asked. This time, Finn chose not to answer. He stood up and said he needed to shower. He gathered his clothes and went into the bathroom. I thought this might be a good time to explore his room, but I suddenly felt very tired. He'd woken me early, and this whole morning had been incredibly draining. Lying back down, I rolled over and curled up in his blankets. They were soft and smelled like him, and I easily fell asleep. Chapter 14. Kingdom. Other than the garden out back, I'd seen little of the palace grounds. After breakfast, Finn took me outside to show me around. The sky was overcast and gloomy, and he stared up at it with a skeptical eye. Is it going to rain? I asked.
You never can tell around here.
He sounded annoyed, then shook his head and walked on, apparently deciding to risk it. We'd gone out the front door of the mansion this time, stepping out on the cobblestone driveway. Trees overshadowed the palace, arching high into the sky. Immediately at the edge of the driveway, lush ferns and plants filled in the gaps between the pines and maples. Finn walked into the trees, pushing the plants aside gently to make a pathway. He'd insisted I wear shoes today, and as I followed behind him, I understood why. A rough trail had been made, but it was overgrown with moss, and twigs and stones littered the ground. Where are we going? I asked, as the path climbed upward.
I'm showing you Foreatening.
Haven't I already seen Foreatening? I stopped and looked around. Through the trees, I couldn't see much of anything, but I suspected it all looked about the same.
You've barely seen anything yet.
Finn glanced back at me, smiling.
Come on, Wendy.
Without waiting for my answer, he climbed on. The trail already had a steep incline, and it looked slick with mud and moss. Finn maneuvered it easily, grabbing onto the occasional branch or protruding root. My climb wasn't anywhere near as graceful. I slipped and stumbled the whole way up, scraping my palms and knees on several sharp rocks. Finn didn't slow and rarely glanced back. He had more faith in my abilities than I did, but I suppose that was nothing new. If I hadn't been so busy mastering a slippery slope, I might have enjoyed the time. The air smelled green and wet from all the pine and leaves. The river below seemed to echo through everything, reminding me of the time I put a conch shell to my ear. Over it, I heard birds chirping, singing a fevered song. Finn waited for me next to a giant boulder, and when I reached him, he made no comment about my slow pace. I didn't have a chance to catch my breath before he grabbed a small handhold in the boulder and started pulling himself up. "I'm pretty sure I can't climb up that," I said, eyeing the slick surface of the rock.
"I'll help you."
He had his feet in a crevice, and he reached back, holding his hand out to me. Logically speaking, if I grabbed onto him, my body weight would pull him back off the boulder. But he didn't doubt his ability to pull us both up, so neither did I. Finn had this way of making me believe anything, and it scared me sometimes. I took his hand, barely getting a chance to enjoy how strong and warm it felt, before he started pulling me up. I squealed, which only made him laugh. He directed me to a crevice, and I found myself hanging on to the boulder for dear life. Finn climbed up, always keeping one hand out for me to grab if I slipped. But I did most of the actual climbing myself. I was surprised when my fingers didn't give and my feet didn't slide. When I pulled myself up to the top of the boulder, I couldn't help but feel a bit of pride. Standing up on the massive rock, wiping mud off my knees, I started to make some comment about my amazing agility. But then, I caught sight of the view. The top of the boulder had to be the highest point atop the bluffs. From here, I could see everything. And somehow, it was even more amazing than the view from the palace. Chimneys stood out like dots among the trees, and I could see the plumes of smoke blowing away in the wind. Roads curved and wound through the town, and a few people walked along them. Alora's palace was masked with vines and trees, but it still looked startlingly large, hanging on the edge of its bluff. The wind whipping through my hair made the whole thing exhilarating. Almost like I was flying, even though I was just standing there.
"This is for eating."
Finn gestured to the hidden houses peeking out among the green foliage. "It is breathtaking," I admitted. "I'm totally in awe."
"It's all yours."
His dark eyes met mine, emphasizing the solemnity of his words. Then he looked away, scanning the trees.
"This is your kingdom."
"Yeah, but it's not actually mine."
"Actually, it kind of is."
He offered me a small smile. I looked back down. In terms of kingdoms, I knew this one was relatively small. It wasn't as if I'd inherited the Roman Empire or anything, but it still felt strange to me that I might possess any kind of kingdom. "What's the point?" I asked softly. When Finn didn't answer, I thought my words might have been carried away by the wind, so I asked louder, "Why do I get this?